We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
There have been 16 separate billion-dollar disasters for 2017, and that actually now ties 2011 for the most individual billion-dollar disasters ever to happen in one year.
That's the Weather Channel tallying the record number of extreme weather events this year. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner. You're listening to ClimateCast. 2017, it may go down as the year of the superstorm. Hurricanes Harvey, Irma, Maria didn't just break weather records, they broke bank accounts. Combined damage estimates for the storms? North of $200 billion. And we're still assessing the economic and human costs of this extreme weather year. So are thousands of Earth scientists this week at the American Geophysical Union Conference in New Orleans. That's where I found Kevin Trenberth. Kevin, people who know climate change know you're one of the world's premier extreme weather and climate change attribution experts. I'm curious to know what it's been like for you watching this incredible extreme weather year of 2017 unfold.
There's certainly been plenty of examples that we think are influenced by climate change, and many examples also where warnings have gone out from scientists over a number of years that do not seem to have been heeded. And as a result, the consequences are a lot worse. A lot of these events have turned into real disasters because of the lack of preparedness associated with these things, whether it's a hurricane in the Gulf or in Texas or in Florida, or whether it's wildfires along the West Coast.
People who know my work here on ClimateCast know I'm pretty measured in the way we talk about what I call climate change enhanced extreme weather events. But to my eyes, this year, climate change is looking more real, more immediate, maybe even more terrifying than ever. It seems clear we've supercharged this atmosphere. It's operating at a much more energetic and extreme level than it did 40 or 50 years ago. So I guess what I'm asking here is to talk me off the ledge a little bit. How much of this is normal, and how much are we witnessing climate change before our very eyes in these extreme weather events?
So in the first place, the hurricane season, as you mentioned, has been exceptional, in the Atlantic at least. And the three hurricanes, Harvey and then Irma and then Maria, had a number of exceptional aspects to them that are very much likely related to climate change. And so it's not as if we weren't going to have hurricanes, but then Harvey came along and it was so big that even after it made landfall, it could reach out to the Gulf and grab the moisture and keep itself going for about 71 hours over land where most storms would have petered out. The amount of rainfall and the water that was involved very much matches the evaporation of the moisture associated with Harvey out of the Gulf of Mexico. And we can measure it also through the change in the ocean heat content in the Gulf of Mexico. Before Harvey, the ocean heat content was at record high levels. And after Harvey, it had dropped quite substantially. We can measure that drop. And that's exactly what we see in terms of the extra moisture that ended up over Texas.
As we look ahead, Kevin, what sort of atmospheric road signs will you be looking for in the next 5 or 10 years after this crazy extreme weather year of 2017?
Well, 2017 is not an El Nino year. On the contrary, there's a weak so-called La Nina cooler event going on in the tropical Pacific. So the natural variability is pushing things in a little bit in the other direction. But it's shaping up to be one of the warmest years on record, maybe in the top four or something like that, in spite of that. So certainly the El Nino that we had in 2015, 2016 gives us a boost and sort of gives us an indicator of the sort of things that we expect to see more commonly. Indeed, one of the things that the general public does not adequately understand is the relationship of this idea of global warming, that there's more heat available, somehow makes the storms more vigorous and more damaging. And the connection between the global warming and storms is one that I keep trying to explain.
Kevin Trenberth with the National Center for Atmospheric Research. Great insight today. Thanks for sharing your expertise with our ClimateCast audience.
You're most welcome.
My name is Mark Hansen. I live in Roseville, Minnesota. My name is Kate Hansen, and I also live in Roseville, Minnesota.
Our house produces more energy than it uses on an annual basis.
I would say Mark is the spearhead. This has been a dream of his in particular for a very long time. I'm all in and definitely on board. We both believe very much in taking care of our world, and so it really is a partnership, but I think he was the instigator.
Both of our cars are electric. We have no natural gas in the house either. Everything is electrically powered. Solar panels up on the roof to provide the electricity. We've got geothermal in the backyard to provide the heat. And after our first full year and a few months, we did indeed reach net zero. As a matter of fact, we produce more power than we used both for our cars and our house. It came out to about 15% more expensive than a house that is built to code in Minnesota.
There's something about that for us that is that integrity of living in a house that exemplifies something we believe in very strongly. And so it makes any delays that we felt along the way or any stress or tiredness of having another planning meeting completely by the wayside, because we've now been there for a year living so happily and comfortably in a house that has meaning at the same time.
And we've had a ton of interest there. A lot of people were very happy to see a house that environmentally friendly, but also, not to toot my own horn, but is a beautiful home. It's a net zero house doesn't have to look like a grain silo. It's, you know, it fits in with the neighborhood very nicely. It's a very contemporary, clean look.
Even if you can't reach a net zero home, you can build a highly efficient home and come very close without it being extraordinarily difficult.
Climate change action at the most local level, your home. Okay, let's face it. Most of us still need to drive somewhere every week, but that carbon coming out of our tailpipes is now the single biggest source of CO2 going into our atmosphere. Last year, for the first time since 1979, America's cars, trucks, and airplanes pumped out more CO2 than our power plants. So as we look at emerging climate change solutions, here's a good question to ask. How climate-friendly is your car? I asked Science Policy Director J. Drake Hamilton at Fresh Energy, what makes a car climate friendly?
Well, you have to consider both what you're driving and where you drive it. If you're in some states that rely on coal for electricity, then you're better off driving the most fuel efficient gas powered car you can. But if you're in other states like Minnesota, where the electric grid is getting cleaner and cleaner with now 23% renewable electricity, that means you have electric car options that beat out the best gas-powered cars.
So in Minnesota, I looked at some of these electric cars. Climate Central has a pretty good study on this. The list includes, as we might expect, the Toyota Prius, a Mitsubishi electric vehicle, a VW vehicle called the e-Golf. I noticed all those are between $22,000 to $28,000. That's not cheap. What if I can't afford a hybrid? Many people can't, or even a new car with energy features. What are the things to look for if I want to buy a climate-friendly car?
This is really good news if your budget doesn't allow for you to buy a new car off the lot. Many electric vehicles are becoming available used as people's three-year leases are coming up and people are trading in and buying the next generation of electric vehicles. So there are some used EVs on the market at really good prices, between $8,000 and $14,000.
Want to see the most climate-friendly cars? Check out the list at climatecentral.org. That's ClimateCast this week. I'm NPR Chief Meteorologist Paul Huttner.